Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Okay, I'm back.
All right. Sounds like a winner.
Yes. So, of course, Joyner on the line is one of the greatest managers ever in the history of the wrestling business, a 2005 WWE Hall of Famer, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Jimmy, how are you doing today, sir?
Man, I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Even better now. What is going on in your world? What have you been up to?
Oh, my gosh, you know, still doing stuff for WWE. Whenever they call me to do radio, TV, or promotions, I'm always there for them. And got a lot of new action figures that have been coming out through Mattel, through WWE, of course. I've got one coming out in January of Funko Pop and an original Elite figure of Jimmy Hart dressed in his Hulkamania outfit when I was managing Hulk Hogan. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Isn't that amazing? If you think about it, you know, that's 30 years ago, and they're still making figures, and they're so popular that they just keep coming out and coming out and coming out.
Well, you know what? It's almost 40 years ago because this is WrestleMania, 39 last year, or coming up, it'd be
true,
either 40 or 39. So it's been quite a while, but thanks the Lord for the wrestling fans.
What is it about that era, you think, that, you know, it just held up so well? Everybody still loves it. Everybody still wants to be a part of it almost.
I think it gives you a chance if you go to one of the live shows at for 3 hours or four, you're going to be able to sit there and not worry about anything, not worry about your bills, not worry about gas prices, not worry about what's happening in the world, and you can live your life again as a young kid like you did when you first went with your daddy or mother back when they used to take you in there years and years ago.
When I think back to, you know, your era, I always call it the Hogan era because obviously Hulk is kind of
That,
he made it mainstream. Hulk is the one that made it big time. Like, what is your kind of thoughts when people kind of reflect back and they look at that era? Like, why did it become as popular as it did, and why did Hulk resonate so much?
Well, I told them the truth. I said, first of all, Hulk, bigger-than-life character, number one. And it got on the front of something. You know, nobody had ever heard of WrestleMania before when Vince put it together. And we did the Rock and Wrestling connection with Cyndi Lauper, and that brought in a lot of the mainstream, you know, television networks and stuff, too. And one thing led to another. And all of a sudden, when you've got somebody bigger than life and something on TV, and TV wasn't overexposed back then either, so it was kind of must-see TV whenever you could get a round of TV so you could see it.
What did you think of Hulk, like, when you just think about him back then? Because it's like, wow, this guy took the world by storm and really made wrestling mainstream and made it a pop culture, made it a global phenomenon.
Well, I'd met him in Memphis years and years ago when it was a local territory, when he came in there where Jerry Lawler brought him in for me to manage him against the King. And when he came in, we started becoming friends back then. And so then he went to New York. I went to New York 5 years later, or four, 3 years later, I'm sorry. And then we became friends again, and we've been friends now for 43 years.
And what is Hulk like? Is it, you know, he's so larger than life, but, you know, is he a down-to-earth, normal, just regular guy? Or is
what you see is what you get. He's down-to-earth. He does, you know, back in the day, he did so many make-a-wishes and everything, which kept him humble always. And, you know, it's just he's like everybody else, you know, trying to make a living and keep it going and trying to make sure you can keep your health going because so many of our wrestling friends have passed away over the last few years. And so, like I said, what you get, what you see is what you get. You know, he's got a restaurant, of course, in Clearwater Beach, Florida. He's got a beach shop there, too, and it's been going on for like 8 or 9 years now. So you must be doing something right if you're staying in business 8 or 9 years.
Last year I went down to the beach shop and Hogan's Hangout, his bar and restaurant. And then this past year, a few weeks ago, I was just at the beach shop in Orlando. So I love the Hulkster, but I love all that stuff. I mean, it's awesome that the beach shop is still, you know, hanging and banging. It's still doing great.
Well, you know, having all that memorabilia and then kind of reminds everybody of their past. Like I said, it's hard to kill a memory.
And to me, too, it's almost like he's like a larger-than-life superhero. I mean, we're going back
absolutely
to 84, 85, but to me, it's like, man, there's Superman over here, but Superman's a cartoon. This guy is a real superhero.
Yeah, and it's harder. You don't see a lot of the heroes back anymore. You know, TV and the life moves so fast now with social media, you don't really have a chance to really latch on to anything anymore. So he's part of that Americana, and kind of like the Elvis Presley of wrestling, you know?
Absolutely. It's funny, there was that always debate, was it Vince McMahon or was it Hulk? But, right, you need both of them together to make that thing work.
Both together. You know, Vince used to say two sticks are harder to break than one, and I think Vince brought something to the table, and so did Hulk, and both of it together. It was just a great marriage between both of them. So both of them working together made this whole big deal with WWE bigger than life back then.
I know, obviously, you had a legendary career even with the Gentrys and obviously with Memphis before you got to WWE, but how did you actually get into WWE? Like, did somebody recruit you in? Did somebody bring you in? How did they get you to go there?
What really happened, rock and roll career, a friend of mine, Jerry Lawler, called me, and I helped him with the wrestling album. So the next thing you know, I'm managing him on Memphis TV for 4 or 5 years. And we were doing great, and all of a sudden I had a phone call from Howard Finkel. And Howard Finkel had saw my tapes in Memphis and knew that they were putting a show together called WrestleMania. So he gave me a call to see if I was interested, and I said, you better believe it. So about an hour later, Vince called me, and I said, feet don't fail me now, baby. And I went to New York City as fast as I could get there.
What did you think when you first got there? Like, it was going to be a success, or were you, you know, a little thinking like, I don't know, it might be a little bit more than he could chew or more than he could handle?
Well, I'd been in New York years before that with Dick Clark because we did all those tours with the Beach Boys and Sonny and Cher and Steppenwolf and the Grassroots. And I knew what New York was like, but with the wrestling, it was a lot different than we had in Memphis. You know, Memphis, there were 7 days a week, a lot of car trips and everything, but New York was 90% of it was all flying to the different cities. You know, we'd go from New York to Cleveland, Cleveland to San Diego, San Diego, California, to back to Seattle, Washington. So that's what it was really like. So it was really bigger than life, especially being in Madison Square Garden.
What was the experience like when you first got there? I mean, were you nervous or were you feeling like you're at home?
No, not really. I enjoyed being there, but I didn't know what to expect. But whatever I expected was going to be bigger than what I really came from as far as the persona. And I had a great person to manage in King Kong Bundy, who I had in Memphis, so I already knew him. And I had Greg the Hammer Valentine, two people that I managed on the first WrestleMania. So I was in good shape.
I was good friends with King Kong Bundy. Actually, before he had passed, I was actually his manager for about a year, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff. Man, what a great guy. And it's funny because on TV, what a heel, what a monster. But in real life, he was a sweetheart.
Yeah, he was so crisp and so funny. He was hilarious. People just didn't know how funny he could really be behind the scenes.
He's another one of those guys that Hulk looked at and was like, I can make money with this guy, right? I mean, he looked at him and it's like, we're going to make money together.
Hey, buddy, everybody Hulk was with made money. Everybody, we had a booking sheet that would come out every 2 weeks, and we'd look and see what cities we're in. And everybody wanted to be on the Hulkster's card because we knew there were going to be sellouts. We knew our paychecks because there was no guaranteed money back then. So we knew our paychecks were going to be very, very good.
It's funny. I was just talking to Jim Brunzel. He said the same thing. He said, man, I used to pray that I was on Hogan's car. You know, I'd make more money for the week or the month.
Yeah, everybody did. And like I said, this is kind of run on three things. You know, your TV ratings, if your TV ratings are up, then your pay-per-view buy rates are going to be up. And then, of course, your house shows are going to be doing great business. If your house shows and everything else is doing good, then your merchandise is going to be good. And it really takes a lot to run a company like that. It depends on pay-per-view buy rates, the merchandise, and your house show business. Back then it did.
So when you come to the WWF, obviously you're the mouth of the South. I mean, obviously,
right.
Ledger. But where did the trademark megaphone come from? I mean, because everybody remembers you from the megaphone.
One day I was in one of the buildings, and Vince came to me and said, Jimmy, here's going to be your new gimmick. You can paint it, do anything you want to with it. And I said, okay, thank you. So he's the one that really brought it to me, and I was able to paint it up with the different people I was managing. I had different colors for them, and it turned out to be a great, great gimmick that Vince brought me that I was able to use for all these years.
Where did he get that from? Like, what was his thought process behind it? It's interesting.
I think there was a Japanese manager when they were in Japan, and he was carrying the megaphone around. It just kind of gave him the idea then to bring it back for me. He could have gave it to Slick, Fuji, Bobby Heenan, or anybody, but I'm so glad he gave it to Jimmy Hart.
What did you think of the first WrestleMania? Because it's a chance. You know, you're taking a huge chance, obviously huge success, but did you think it was going to be a huge success?
Well, I really didn't know because, you know, me coming from Memphis, you know, we our biggest crowds were 10 or 12,000 on a Monday night, you know. And so to walk into a room, there's Dick Clark and there's Liberace and Mr. T and Muhammad Ali, and it was just Billy Martin. It was just Cyndi Lauper. And so it was just a thrill for me just seeing the celebrities. And then all through the audience, there were celebrities. Of course, it was a sellout, and it was going to be televised nationally in movie theaters everywhere. So, like I said, I knew it wasn't going to be no bomb. I knew that.
And was it a huge home run? Like you mentioned, you, obviously Greg Valentine was on that card against JYD, and Bundy beat SD Jones. Is that true? Because Bundy told me SD Jones, because he said the match was supposed to be about 3 seconds, and SD Jones kind of, and if you watch, he does kind of wander around a little bit. Was Bundy messing with me, or is it true that SD Jones kind of tried to make the match longer than it was really supposed to be?
You know what? I really can't tell you, because we got in the ring, and, you know, you got to give a chance for the people to kind of at least see you. You can't just dive on somebody so quick. So I think that was more like SD Jones getting his response from the crowd, Bundy getting his response from the crowd. And then from there, you know, that was it. Katie barred the door.
So funny, as you look at it, like, he basically beats him in 20 seconds, according to Bundy. To me, he's like, oh, I was supposed to beat him in 5 seconds. He wanted some extra time out there. So, who knows? He might have been just messing with me saying that.
Right. But I think that was Bundy just kidding with you.
And obviously, Greg the Hammer, one of the all-time greats.
Oh,
I feel like
phenomenal.
His IC title run was great. You like working with the Hammer?
Hammer's great. I still see him off and on now, but we had a great run together for so many years. But Greg's very special. He's kind of a throwback from the old school. You know, his daddy was a great wrestler back in the day. But Greg had the bleach blonde hair and the long robes, kind of like a Ric Flair, Gorgeous George, Buddy Rogers type thing. But it was just a great experience. As a matter of fact, everybody I was able to manage up in New York was phenomenal.
Hey, you had quite the stable. Even adorable Adrian Adonis, whose name is back in the news because of that documentary, and he's got a new book out too. So even adorable Adrian Adonis was an awesome one that you managed.
Adrian Adonis, Dino Bravo, the Honky Tonk Man, Greg Valentine, King Kong Bundy, the Hart Foundation, the Nasty Boys, the Rougeau Brothers, Earthquake and Typhoon, Terry and Dory Funk, Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. I mean, it was just so many of them. It was just a great time for me. It really was.
What is the importance of a wrestling manager? Because it seems like there's not as many today, minus like Paul Heyman and a few other guys, but it seems like back then it was so important to have a manager.
Well, you know, Paul Heyman's great. Jimmy Cornette was great. All the managers that I had fun with up there were just awesome. But I think back in the day, a lot of times the managers did a lot of the talking and kind of put your talent over, what I've always liked to do. And nowadays, there's a lot of writing, you know, and so they want really less managers and more of the talent doing their talking, so you really don't need it. And Paul Heyman doesn't really call himself a manager. He calls himself an advocate.
Yes, true. Back then, you were, just a heat magnet. It was almost like, okay, you know, or Missing Link or Bravo, whoever, okay, if they're on their own, you don't like them. But if your associate was like, oh, we really don't like this guy. I mean, how did you become such a heat magnet to the fans? Because it was like, wow, that now the guy is a huge heel because Jimmy Hart is managing him.
Well, I think having a Southern accent, and I think when I used to go to football games or baseball games and my team would lose, I always hated it when the other team's cheerleaders or mascot or their fans would get right in the camera going, we're number one, we're in it. So I felt like if I can bring that to the table and go, we're the greatest, we beat, you know what I'm saying? And by doing that up-tempo type thing, I think we generate a lot of heat without really running down the fans, because I never like to run down the fans and call them names and stuff, because after all, they're the ones that are paying our salary and bought a ticket to see us.
Who do you think is the greatest manager? Would you put yourself up there?
No, not really. Jimmy Cornette, Bobby Heenan, of course, Lou Albano, of course, you know, Paul Heyman. There are just so many of them that I'd put way before Jimmy Hart.
It's funny. Heyman was just being interviewed by ESPN, and he said that he put himself over Bobby Heenan. I think he was just trying to, you know, get people going. But I was like, wow, he's putting himself over. You're not doing that. You're not putting yourself over the.
Well,
over the
I'm just telling you how I really feel. But Bobby, what he said was, a friend of mine called me, the guy that hosts the thing, Stephen A. Smith. He said, Heyman, I'd like to be a manager like you. And he said, you can't, I'm the GOAT. He said, well, what about Bobby Heenan? And he said, screw Bobby Heenan. And he said, and then Heyman went, and Jimmy Hart, he said, he's still alive, but I'm praying, but my heart, but the Lord hadn't answered my prayers yet.
Well,
so I went, oh my God. I went, but, you know, it's okay. It is what it is. I still love Paul. He's the greatest.
Is he just trying to, you know, bust your balls a little bit there, it seems like?
Well, this day and time, you got to be so careful what you say. So you don't get any feedback from anybody going, hey, you wish another guy was dead, you know?
Right. Yeah, true. It's pretty crazy if you just look at the, like, how many great managers there were in the 80s versus now. I mean, there's only a couple, but the 80s was crazy. Luscious Johnny V, Slick, you, Bobby the Brain, Sherry Martel. I mean, it was littered with awesome managers.
Well, they use a lot of girls to go to the ring with the wrestlers now. You know, a lot of the tag teams have girls that go out and at ringside with them. So I don't know if that means that they feel like the tag teams aren't up to par and they got to have a girl with them to kind of get the attention or what the deal might be. But, you know, I'm sure they do a great job too, you know.
Let's say you were a manager today, they put you in there. Who would you want to manage today out of the current crop?
Oh, my God. There's a new team that just came in with him. One of the kids got his shoulder hurt. He was formerly with NXT. And I wish I could think of their name. Deadly something right now. I think that's what they're called.
Pretty Deadly. Yep.
Yeah, Pretty Deadly. Oh, I like those kids. You know why? Because they kind of remind me of my era. You know, they talk big, but get knocked around, but they're colorful, you know. And they're not real, real big giant guys. I like them. I think they could really draw some big money. I'd love to have, if I had a chance to do it again, that's who I'd like to be with.
They are a bit of throwbacks. For sure, like they could fit in that 80s era.
Yes.
Even the way they dress.
Absolutely, and that's what I like about them because I remember when I was on tour with Dick Clark, people always asked me, Jimmy, you were so colorful when you were in WWE. The reason why is because Dick Clark sat down with me and the Beach Boys and everybody else on our first tour, and he said, look, remember this. When you're in front of an audience, give them their money's worth. If you dress like the audience, one day you're going to wind up sitting in the audience, meaning be colorful. Give the people their money's worth. Don't come dressed like they are.
That is true. And, man, did you stand out. It's just crazy how much you still like those jackets. I mean, God, how many awesome jackets did you have?
Well, quite a few. I had always different ones for each of my clients or my wrestling guys that I managed because I wanted to make them special. I didn't want to go out with the Nasty Boys and wear a Hart Foundation jacket and vice versa. I just always wanted to be special for my guys. My deal with what really putting me over, it was putting my men over. I wanted the people to know that, hey, I'm the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, and I'm here with the Nasty Boys or with the Rougeau brothers. I wanted to make sure they were the ones that special, not me, you know?
And you went like above and beyond because I don't even know how much money you would have spent, but probably thousands of dollars on jackets through the years.
Well, you had to be colorful. Like Dick Clark said, you wind up sitting in the audience. So I made sure that Vince didn't want me to sit in the audience. I wanted to say when they had cutbacks, well, let's keep old Jimmy Hart. You know, he's colorful if nothing else, you know.
Yep. What about a guy like Roman Reigns? Would that be a guy that you'd be interested in managing, like as far as
you know what?
Craft?
I think first of all, he does a great job, and Paul fits him so greatly. You know, Paul fits him to a T. I think my character is a little bit too over the top for that because I'm more like, hey, baby, how you know what I mean? That's always been my thing, up-tempo, never kind of laid back. And I just think that Roman does such a great job along with Paul together. They really fit good together.
And, of course, outside of just the managing, you created so many great wrestling themes, obviously J.J. McGuire as well, who passed away. I know he's a good friend of yours, had the opportunity to interview him a few years ago. How did you come up with so many of these great theme songs through the years?
Well, I think what happened, maybe being on the road with everybody and Jimmy being formerly from my Gentry group, I just would call him and I'd say, hey, look, baby. I said, let's put some good stuff together, some good songs, and I kind of had an altar harp to me showing McGuire what we had. He transferred over to guitar, then we go in the studio and put everything down. And so it just worked good because I was on the road with the guys, and I kind of knew what kind of pace they went to the ring with and everything. So it really just worked out. McGuire was great. He passed away about 7 or 8 months ago, and it was a big loss for me because we'd spent so much time together on the road as the Gentries and been my friend for so many years. And he was so talented because he could play all the instruments. He was great.
Yeah, he was definitely one of a kind. It's one of those things where it's crazy, like, to have that talent, but to make that talent match up with the guy, you know what I mean? Like, have the music
fit
the guy. There's, like, a science behind that, because sometimes the music, if it fits the guy right, you remember it forever.
Well, that's what, you know, we really wanted. And then when I went to WCW, my other partner, Howard Helm, was like Jimmy. He could play everything. He was just unbelievable. When we went over there, I used him to do my WCW stuff, you know, and because that way everything wouldn't sound alike. And so I've had two good runs with two great different people, you know, we sure have.
Amazing. I mean, all those themes were great. And then I also love, like, the obviously Hogan's theme, Real American, was super memorable, but his WCW theme, American Made, I mean, that was awesome when you guys did that. I guess it was like kind of like the Hulk Hogan band, if you will.
Well, absolutely, and Jimmy was part of that. Because we had to come up with something that was different than Real American, but something that kind of had the same tone and the same story, you know, and that's what we came up with. And we cut that off of, that was off Hulk's album that we did, the Wrestling Boot Band. So that turned out pretty good for us. So Eric liked it, and that's why we used it at WCW.
It's crazy because it's like, okay, Jimmy's great in front of the camera, we know him, but then also behind the scenes, it's like you're doing two jobs.
Well, you know what I mean? Sometimes if you want to keep a job, you got to be able to, if you have a restaurant, wash the dishes, sweep the floor, cook the food, greet the people, and hopefully if you got what the people want, come back and see you.
And then WCW, right? You were a part of Saturday Night Booking for a while, right? Like you basically were kind of took over that show.
Well, me, Arn Anderson, David Penzer, and Janie Engel, and Paul Orndorff, and Arn Anderson, we all worked on the major shows, but then we had a chance to work on the Saturday night show, too, and we did pretty good with it. Our ratings were doing pretty well, and we didn't use any of the major, major stars. We felt like everybody was a star, you know, and we had very good ratings on it, and it did real well for a while. Eric Bischoff came to me one day and said, how would you like to have it? I said, no, thank you, Eric. I'd love to do it, you know. So I give him credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's so many guys that maybe even they weren't using on TV that were stars in WCW. They were a big part of Saturday Night for a while.
And, you know, SummerSlam's coming up this Saturday, too, which is going to be awesome. Man, I can't wait to see Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar and so many of the other matches. You know, it's just going to be phenomenal. I'm looking so forward to it. You know, I was on the first SummerSlam back with Honky Tonk Man against Warrior. Then I came back and managed, along with Mr. Fuji, the Demolition against the Hart Foundation when I turned on the Hart Foundation. So, you know, every time SummerSlam comes up, I always look forward to it.
Yeah, obviously, to me, I know WrestleMania is obviously number one, but maybe Royal Rumble too, but I always think SummerSlam is the second biggest show of the year. It's always huge. There's always huge stars. The main event's always kicking. I mean, it's always like a huge turning point in the year for the WWE.
Well, now everything's huge because they're going to outdoor stadiums now. And instead of doing one day, WrestleMania is 2 days. You know, that's how many fans they want to give a chance to come out and see, you know, what has taken place. So it's just a great experience to still be part of the company because, you know, they're still going stronger than ever. And, you know, NXT is a developmental territory, you know, which is up in Orlando for the talent. And if you look back now, except for Edge, who's in the in and out, Randy Orton, who's in there in and out, and Rey Mysterio, everybody else came from NXT. You know, Seth Rollins, Bianca Belair, just everybody, you know, through the years. So they've really got the show going because of all the NXT kids.
No doubt about it. Just one kind of big final question for you from me here as we wind it down. When you look at Jimmy Hart and his legacy and his career, Like, how would you sum it up if somebody was kind of looking back, or if they want to know, hey, what was Jimmy Hart's stamp on the business? Like, how would you sum it up? What would you say about Jimmy Hart and your legacy in the wrestling business?
And I like for people to go, what a wild and crazy guy he was, man. He entertained us, his music. We loved his music. He gave us everything he could give us, you know. Every time we met him and saw him, he was all so nice to us and gracious and never heard a bad thing to say about anybody. And, you know, that's basically about it, you know. And this day and age, especially since, you know, people want the drama. They want to hear the bad things. You know, I turned down a show that they had Brutus Beefcake. They were doing another Dark Side of the Ring on him. And they came to me about doing the Dark Side of the Ring and said, look, I'll do Happy Side of the Ring, but not Dark Side of the Ring. I said, look, we worked so hard to get a WWE Hall of Fame ring. And when we got on stage, they had great videos of us and they inducted us in a class with all the people that we were with back in the day. And then we have our peers in the audience and so many fans see us and they do so well to put us over. Well, I want to tear it down.
Yeah, why though, right? You want to, let's cover the good side of business. Let's talk about Brutus
Absolutely.
Cutting people's hair and team with Hulk and winning
Absolutely.
The tag titles with Greg the Hammer.
Honky Tonk Man, everything, you know. So, like I said, I've had a great run in the music. I've had a great run in the wrestling field. And so I guess the moral of the story is don't send me no flowers because I ain't dead yet.
Where can everybody kind of find you and reach you, like, in social media, and where can everybody check out the Mouth of the South?
Well, I have a little Facebook out there, and I have a don't ask me what it is because I never FaceTime myself, and I have an Instagram, and I also have a Twitter, and so we keep up with it. I appreciate everybody that I'm not trying to do 50 million people or whatever like a lot of people. Because, like, what we talk about is just the positive things and nothing negative, you know?
Yeah, it's one good thing about you. You always like to keep it positive. I think that's why you and Hulk always get along so well, right? I mean, you got to keep those positive vibes up.
I love – yeah, Hulk's been great for me, and you know, we've been friends for 43 years, and his restaurant's doing so good up in Clearwater. Hogan's Hangout, his beach shop, Hogan's Beach Shop in Orlando and Clearwater are doing great, and like I said before, all we can do is get up and go every day. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm just an American citizen, and I just want everybody to get along, and let's try to make this world one better place to live. And other than that, I love you for doing the interview with me and WWE for giving me permission to do it. So just thank you for taking your time out doing this with me.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. I appreciate all the time.
All right. We love you, baby. Keep on dancing.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye, buddy. Thank you.
Bye.